And I just, I didn't want to get a booth because I spend so much time in there. It's just, I didn't want to sit in a little booth. I mean, I just, it's just depressing to me.
Yeah.
So I got a Portabooth Plus, and it works great.
It does.
It really works well.
Yeah. It's perfect for a 416 or, and certainly for doing promo work, which is what Harlan designed it for. And, good choice.
Are you using your U87?
Yeah, I use the 87.
Portabooth Plus, and it's working pretty well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, there's something you wouldn't have thought.
That's awesome.
Big microphone to fit in that little Portabooth Plus. Yeah.
But well, I have to sort of bend it out.
Yeah.
But it works fine.
Oh, it really does.
It's a great unit and portable. So yes. If you ever go on the road and you have to use it on the road, not that you would take your U87 on the road, but maybe you do.
You could.
It's just, you know,
I got a little Apogee for that, but I rarely have to work on that.
Right. Works great with the Apogee. Anyway, Fred Melamed uses one. You should, too. VoiceOverEssentials.com. Go over there and tell him we sent you. You can actually just go straight over there, but if you're on our webpage, if you're watching the show on our webpage, and right above my head, or is it below
me? No, not at the bottom.
It's at the bottom of the page.
Right-click, and you
just
say
go
new
down,
tab.
Keep going down. You'll see Harlan's picture talking into a portabooth. Click on that, and that will take you right over to VoiceOverEssentials.com. Thank you, Harlan, for sponsoring us for almost 4.5 years.
Long time.
My goodness. Eventually, he's going to catch on. But anyway, we're here with Fred Melamed talking about voiceover and his career and what he thinks about voiceover. But you guys have a lot of questions, so why don't we get to some of those? And our thanks again to Anthony for monitoring the chat room tonight. First question from Lee, probably Lee Pinney.
Yeah.
Good evening, Clarence, Fred. I was wondering if you might share any anecdotes you might have about working with Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell is a great guy. I had never met him before. I have a movie that came out, I guess, about 2 months ago now.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 2 months or maybe 6 weeks? It's called Bone Tomahawk. That's the name of the film. It's a Western film. I don't have a really amusing story to tell about Kurt Russell that I can think of, but this was an interesting film. It's a sort of traditional Western with a sort of a horror ending, kind of a Western horror mashup.
Okay.
And the guy who wrote it is well known in the movie business because he's written, I think, 30 scripts that have all appeared in this famous thing called the Blacklist of Scripts, which are all the best scripts that don't get produced at the end of the year.
Right.
So this guy called Craig Zoller, had a number of scripts on the blacklist. So this particular script, Bone Tomahawk, he wanted to direct himself. So it's his first directorial debut, and he got quite a good cast for it. He got, in addition to Kurt, he got Richard Jenkins. Let's see, who else? Sid Haig, for people that know horror fans, kind of mm-hmm. genre films. Sean Young, really, really good cast.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I can tell you, which is not a particularly amusing thing, is that Kurt takes it very, very seriously. He takes the work very, very seriously. And while we were shooting it a year ago last summer, and like last summer, it was exceedingly hot. It was really, really hot. And the whole film was shot at a ranch called the Paramount Ranch, which is a ranch owned by Paramount Pictures, and they use it to shoot Gunsmoke and a number of other things.
Right.
Well, there's no air conditioning in all of Paramount Ranch, and it was in mm-hmm. summer, and it was like 115 degrees every day. And I really can't stand heat. I have a real problem with heat. So I asked for permission from the producers that I could keep my car running right like 5 feet outside the shot, like where the end of the camera was.
Dump in there to keep
exactly,
the air conditioning,
air conditioning
on.
On.
I've done that too.
Turn it on. It was on all day. And I would run in there and, you know, sit in there for 10 minutes and cool off, and then I'd be fine. And Kurt saw me doing this, and he said, what are you doing? I said, well, it's just so hot in here. I know, I just can't take it. He said, can I go in the car with you? I said, of course, sure. So then it was Kurt and me. And then by the time we were done shooting, it was like 11 people stuffed in my car because it was so hot. It
wasn't helping. Yeah. I remember that happened to me once. It's like we were shooting a commercial or something and there was no air conditioning in the studio. And the producer said, come on, we'll go out in my car. You know, it still didn't help. They were drying me off with hair dryers.
Oh, I can't stand heat. Can't take it. And the last 2 summers, we've had tough summers in LA.
I was only here for one, and that was pretty hot. Alrighty, what else we got? Shelley Avellino, voice actor.
Hi, Shelley.
Yes. She asks, question for Fred, what genre of voiceover do you prefer and why? And do you prefer voiceover to on-camera work? Well, you sort of touched on what type of stuff you like to do, but what about voiceover versus camera work?
Well, they're very different. The money, relative to the amount of work, the money is much greater doing voiceovers for the vast majority of people that do both. There's a kind of a line you can go over where you can start making a lot of money on camera as well, but that takes some getting to. As an artistic experience, they're very different. I liked the freedom of being able to do stuff with my voice, which I felt I could control, and I liked the sort of anonymity of being able to do that without the audience seeing me. You know, if you think about it, with your voice, you can be anything. You can be a villainous character, you can be a romantic lover, you could be somebody old, you could be somebody young. There's all kinds of things you could do. Whereas, you know, if you look like this, you're either like a rabbi or a school principal. That's kind of the end of it. You don't have that many options.
Or a dad.
You know, I'm kidding, but I mean, what you look like in casting is a much more significant impasse when it comes to on-camera casting. That said, acting on camera is a much more full experience, much more fulfilling experience, because you have nothing to hide behind. So you have to sort of throw your whole self into it, your whole body and mind into it. So as far as pure joy goes, regular acting is by far more satisfying for me. But voice acting it's like a skill. It's like a skill that, you know, you use a very specific set of talents, specific set of abilities. And if you get good at those, it's like being a pool shark. You're just really sharp at those. And you can not only make a lot of money, you can also add very, very significantly to anything, to a film, to a commercial, to there's so much stuff that's on the internet. You know, your contribution to it provides an awful lot of character. In the old days, when they would do commercials, initially, they would always shoot the video or the film first, and they would add the voiceover as the final thing. And unlike the film part, where they allowed the director to cast it, the agency would always cast the voiceover. They wouldn't let the director do it. And the reason why is the character of the product is much more identified with the voice than what happens on camera. It's much more the voice of the product. So they felt it was a much more significant decision.
Yeah. I have an input on that. Since you brought up the on-camera, you know, commercial aspect, what is your opinion about, you know, big celebrities do advertising for big products on television, but usually overseas? And just recently, we had George Clooney and Danny DeVito doing Nescafe, or the new Nespresso, right? I looked at that, and it rubbed me wrong to see that. It was weird. And I know this is the norm, and I saw the movie Lost in Translation, which was great, because you got to see what that world is like. From your perspective, how do you feel about that? Is this just a line we're going to cross now, and we need actors to be seen in more different and varied ways? Do you think it's a creative thing that they enjoy doing? How do you look at that whole thing?
I think it's inevitable. It's not something that I particularly like.
Yeah.
But I think the line has been crossed. I've been doing voiceovers long enough that big actors didn't do voiceovers at all for years and years when I started. It's an interesting story. What happened was the movie Apocalypse Now, I'm sure most people have seen that movie, are familiar with that movie. So that movie was shot by Francis Coppola, and the script was written by John Milius. And when they had all the footage, Francis Coppola thought it was a little disjointed and didn't make sense. So he required John Milius, the writer, to write about 40 minutes worth of narration. And there's a kind of an unwritten rule in filmmaking, which is that you're not supposed to use voiceover. This is no longer observed, but it was thought that using voiceover was kind of a cheap way of doing things.
Mm. Just having a narration over what's going on.
Yeah, because you're sort of telling people instead of showing it,
right.
So to speak. So there was a kind of a that was kind of a taboo thing. However, when they were editing Apocalypse Now, they decided to use a massive amount of voiceover in it.
I was waiting for a mission.
Right, exactly.
Great, great voice.
Saigon.
Device.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they had Martin Sheen, who was the protagonist, do all this voiceover. And there was an executive from Pepsi who heard Martin Sheen do, and of course the voiceover was great of it.
Right, yeah.
Heard Martin Sheen do voiceover. And this is
1985 or so.
Not even. I think 1980 or maybe 79, even a long time ago. So they offered Martin Sheen, I think it was $1 million back then, and that was when $1 million was, you know, you could get
that
more
was
than,
when it was $1 million.
Right. Now you get like a parking space. On, right. You know, but in those days, $1 million was a lot of money. And they offered him $1 million to do some Pepsi commercials, and he took it. So he was the first.
I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, he was the first. And it used to be that if you heard an actor doing voiceovers, or certainly on an on-camera commercial, it meant his career was, you know, definitely on the decline.
Yeah.
But that really changed things. And then not long after that, you heard James Earl Jones and other people, and that opened up the floodgates. And now people like you and me who do voiceovers and have been doing them for a while decry the fact that we not only have to compete with each other, but there's this massive influx of celebrities that we have to compete with also.
Right.
So I have a feeling, although I find it, I don't want to say distasteful, I find it jarring like you do, George, but I think like everything else, it all, you know, we're always nostalgic for the rules of the game when we came of age. You know, I know people that love and maintain the idea that vinyl is superior, and lots of people think film can never be. Yeah, I think whatever the artifact is that you're born listening to or looking at, you have a kind of a warm feeling for it. It's just part of the way people are. And I think we were raised in a time when big actors, particularly movie actors, you know, didn't do commercials because, after all, they're supposed to be artists. And secondly, they're making millions of bucks. So is it really necessary for them to make another $1 million doing Hershey bars or whatever? Mm-hmm. But they didn't feel too proud about doing stuff if it was going to show just in Japan. Or I did some commercials for Woody Allen that only showed in Italy. Woody Allen still has a lot of commercials, but nothing that shows in the United States. But I think now that the floodgates are open, I don't think there's any turning back. I think you're going to see it.
Yeah, I think Sam Jackson was maybe the first Samuel L. Jackson doing the Visa commercials.
Yeah.
That surprised me.
Him, and I'm trying to think, who else really of big stature actors? Well, that was, the George Clooney thing is kind of, you know, and I know George, but, I think the attitude of a lot of actors is, well, you know, it's being done. So if I'm not going to do it, they're going to give it to Harrison Ford or somebody else, equally, you know, big.
Yeah.
And
I also saw that in that case that I did a little research on it. I wanted to know what was the motivation. And apparently there was also a trade in terms of supporting a Sudan, one of the charities that George is involved with.
Right.
So, you know, that, but you as the viewer wouldn't know that, but it
no,
was,
but I
there
think
was
that,
an article about that. And I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that about it. This, as you say, I don't think people know that, but I think that somehow makes it a little more palatable. Mm-hmm. A little more palatable.
Okay. Trey Mosley asks, in the movie, In a World, your character Sam Sato was mentioned with Don LaFontaine. Did art imitate life? Did you ever get a chance to meet Don?
Yes, I did.
I'm sure you did.
Many times.
Yeah.
There was, at the time, not at the time, but earlier than that, I did a lot of promo work. I was the voice of CBS Sports, so I did all the CBS Sports promos. I did all the promos for USA, all their original productions, world premiere movies, various shows that they produced. So I was big in promos for a long time. So in the late 80s, there was something called the Promo Announcers Caucus, a bunch of guys that did union promos that got together to try and raise rates and try, you know, they used to do things like they'd say, well, okay, you're doing 5 promos, you get paid for, and here's 2 you don't get paid for. This was done a lot.
Right.
So we tried to get together, band together to stop these certain sort of winked at practices that were really contrary to the contracts of the unions. Anyway, we used to meet in New York at After. This is when After and SAG were separate. And we met at After headquarters in New York. So Don, who was, of course, you know, huge in that world, would always fly in. So I got to meet him that way initially. And then when I came to California to do some movies and things, got to be rather friendly with him and his wife and got to know him, you know, not extremely well, but well enough to know each other and like each other.
Yeah.
He was also a guy, I don't want to go into it too long, but he was a guy, a very much beloved guy. He really helped people, was very happy to be of any kind of help he could to people that wanted to get into it and was very friendly. And he dominated the business for years and years, you know, for a good almost 20 years, I think.
Yeah. And we always joke about, you know, George was his engineer. What did George put in his studio to make him so good? Don LaFontaine.
Right.
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
Let's see here. John Keeney asked this one, and this is an important one. What are your favorite voice warm-ups, and would you do them for us?
I don't really do many voice warm-ups, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
I try. It kind of depends on what I'm, you know, what I'm feeling on the day, but I don't do a lot of voice warm-ups. I tend to get a little tight in here, in the jaw. Mm-hmm. So I do this kind of thing. but in terms of vocal production, nothing. I do have a problem, not a problem, but a tendency, as many people do, to produce a lot of saliva. So I use the old trick of eating an apple.
Yeah,
which works for me.
One of our favorite ones, yeah.
Yeah, that's a common one. Some people, there's a thing called throat coat or announcer secret that some people use.
I use Alkalol, which is in that spray bottle right next to Jay over there.
Mm-hmm.
Works fabulous. Now, it says something else on there, but it's Alkalol.
Not alcohol.
Alkalol.
Alkalol.
I've mentioned it many times on the show. Works fabulous.
But I don't do too much. I don't smoke.
Yeah, good.
I exercise. Although you can't tell a look at me, I do exercise. And I try and be careful about, I have allergies. So I try and be careful about when it's allergy time. I have one of those disgusting things that you put in your nose and rinses your nose out and things like that. But I don't do much in the way of vocal warming up, no.
When you already sound great, why bother?
Well, that's kind of you to say.
Well, that's why I said it. Okay, let's see here. Okay. Paul Stefano, knowing what you now know, Fred, would you start out in this business again today, at the way it is today?
Well, by this business, I'm not sure what Paul means.
In voiceover.
Does it mean voiceover? Yeah. I think, to be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that. It's changed so much in the time that I've been in it. I'm sorry, that's my phone. Do you hear that?
Oh, it's yours. Okay.
No. Yeah. Okay. You're allowed to answer it on the show. It's one of our rules. But...
Do you know that great thing that Tig Notaro did? Where she did this great routine. She was sitting there on Jay Leno, and she gets a call. And she goes, excuse me. And she goes, oh, nothing special.
What, I mean, nothing special?
She's freaking loud. She's great.
That's a hard question. I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's become so competitive. So competitive, and there are so many people trying to break in. I think I would be certainly less inclined now than I was when I started. You know, when I started, there was a hump to get over to be kind of acknowledged as good at it. But once you were over that hump, you weren't competing with 90 million people on every job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've never gone on to a P2P site. I've never done anything like that. You know, I have an agent, and people know who I am well enough that it's my good fortune that, you know, people will call and ask for me sometimes. But I've never done a P2P thing or anything like that. So the answer is I'm not sure about that, but it's certainly harder today than it was.
Yeah. And Chris, there's a lot more stuff going on there, too.
Yes.
Lots of different genres of material. Carol Spencer Morgan asks, will you be making a return to The Good Wife soon? Fingers crossed. Now, she's having her lunch in Australia right now.
Yes.
So she's going to be thrilled to hear if you're going to
be... Hi, Carol. We're Facebook friends. I know who she
is. Okay, great.
Not that I know of.
There was a great character. You was so thrilled. Hey, there's Fred Melamed.
Thank you. The rumor is that show may not go on past this next season. I don't know if that's really true.
It's been on for a while.
It has been on for a while. And, you know, the Kings have other projects... and I think some other people on the show do as well. I don't know if I'll ever get back there, but I'd be happy to. I really enjoy doing that show.
Yeah.
It gives me a reason to go back to New York, too, which I always like.
Steve Tardio asks, was there a script when you were on Curb Your Enthusiasm, or was the dialogue improvised, since improv is an important thing for some voiceover projects, too?
No, it was entirely improvised, and I didn't know that.
You just walked on this set?
Yeah, like, well, not exactly. What happened was they had seen me, the casting director and the producers had seen me in something, and what you get is you get this little slip of paper like the size of a fortune cookie. It's right. Tiny. And it said, I knew that I was Larry's psychiatrist. He said, you're Larry's psychiatrist, and you have charged him for a session that was not in the office. And I knew what the set was because it was supposed to be a baseball card, like a fair, like a show of baseball cards. Mm-hmm. People buy baseball mm-hmm. cards. That was it. And so for the first three or four takes, I'm like, fancy meeting you here at the baseball card show. Nothing very funny. And fortunately, you know, they shoot that show on digital so they can do a lot of takes and keep going. And then I had this idea. I thought, well, I had a therapist once who started name-dropping showbiz names. I thought, well, that'd be a good idea. I'll try that since I'm supposed to be his therapist. And I was thinking, I need a kind of a really not famous, but like a mid-level celebrity who's not great, but just like a, you know, somebody. Right. So I was thinking, like a rock band. What's it like an average kind of rock band? Maybe Three Dog Night or Grand Funk. Grand Funk Railroad. Perfect. So who's the lead guitarist for Grand Funk Railroad? And I happen to have remembered that the lead guitarist was Mark Farner. So I said to Larry, let me tell you a story about a patient of mine. I don't want to reveal who he was, but he was a very famous rock guitarist. He played for the band Grand Funk Railroad. Well, I just told you it was Grand Funk Railroad. You just look on a CD. His name was Mark Farner. Anyway, the thing about Mark Farner was, and I said this, and Larry started to laugh in the middle of us doing it, and he was really laughing seriously. He said, go on, go on, go on. So we kept it up, and it was fine. And then finally we had another scene to do, and I said, well, it should be somebody really famous, like not, you know, a little famous, but super famous. So I said, it should be a famous director. Like, what famous director could it be? So Dave Mandel and Alec Berg, the two writers on that show, said, well, how about like somebody really famous, like George Lucas? Yeah, George. I said, well, I'll never work in a Star Wars film if I say it's George Lucas, especially since I'm going to say he likes to see prostitutes. I made up this whole thing. He was complaining that we had only talked for 5 minutes, you know, and that how dare I bill him for an hour. And I said, well, you know, let me tell you about a client of mine. I don't want to reveal who he was, but he's a very, very well-known, noted director. He did direct Star Wars. So Larry said, well, that's George Lewis. I mean, so I said, well, I would never say that. But my point is, he has within his repertoire of things that he likes to see prostitutes. And in fact, though, he only needs 5 minutes or so to complete the shot, if you understand what I'm saying, he pays for the full hour, which is their minimum. And of course, that's understood. That's how they do business. So we did this whole thing, and I knew very well that, you know, I was never going to come on George Lucas's Rolodex after that, but we went ahead. But to answer the question, it's completely improvised, but you have plenty of chances.
Right, okay.
Plenty of opportunities to do it, you know, more than once.
So they're basically playing improv, and they're giving you a slip. Here's your situation.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Wow.
No pressure.
That's tough. Fred, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show. Of course, the last time you were on, he was frozen, if you'll recall. Yes. Yeah, your video froze, and there was this shot of you going for like 45 minutes.
This is so much better now.
This is so much better. A pleasure to see you in person.
My pleasure.
And thanks for coming on our show. Fred Melamed.
Delighted to be here.
All right.
Thank you so much.
We're going to clean things up into a nice tight little bow in just a minute, so don't go away.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Learn the latest in voiceover technology, business, and good old-fashioned acting.
I really like your bracelet. It's awesome.
Hey, Paul, where did you get that watch?
That's really cool.
And a hamburger with no cheese, please.
Every Monday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, only on voiceoverbodyshop.com.
And you can say, and we're back.
Yay!
Because I always say that.
No, you know, trying to be professional. No,
say it like it's professional.
And we're back.
Okay, very good. All righty. Well, thanks again to Fred Melamed for joining us tonight on VoiceOver Body Shop. Great stuff. You know, that's the kind of stuff people want to hear about and understand what a fun business this is and some of the great opportunities you can have. Upcoming shows. Next week, we always look forward to this.
This is a big one for me.
Yeah. Tech Roundtable. We've got our buddies. We got Uncle Roy is going to be with us, and Cliff Zellman down in Dallas, and Juan Carlos is coming into our studio.
Woo-hoo! We're in his neck of the woods now.
Yeah, now I've always wanted. You know, he has a nice home studio. I have always wanted him to see my home studio.
That's right.
And now he's like 10 minutes from here.
Fantastic.
This is just fabulous. So, if you have any tech questions, I mean, you send them to us usually. If there's anything that you want us to discuss as far as voiceover technology goes and how to make your studio sound the best and what producers are looking for, send it in.
If you're looking for a heated debate, this is the time to send it.
We never debate. We're always like, right. Yeah. Well, you're fine.
Well, maybe you can find the right question to get us all
See if you can find a question that will really make us debate.
Sorry, send it to the guys.
The guys at voiceover or VOBS.tv.
Yeah.
Okay, 15 episodes, and I finally learned that one. It only took me 120 to learn the other one. Okay, December 21st, our friend Stu Herrera will be with us.
Nice.
He's a busy guy working at CBS Radio and all the other voiceover stuff he does. The 28th is my birthday. You're going to be in New York.
I am.
But
Philadelphia.
Yeah, you'll be back east. Yeah. You know, but we're going to have a little birthday party here. And nice. And you're invited, but you're going to be in New York.
Well, I'll Skype in.
Yeah. So we'll have a few people over here. And we're not sure what we're going to do, but I think we'll have a couple of our good friends and we'll interview them. And,
awesome.
You know, maybe have a few people zoom in as well. And
zoom, 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 that will be fun.
Zoom, zoom. All right. And then in January, I guess, are we going to do a highlight show this year?
Yeah, maybe we'll do it in January.
Maybe we'll do it in January. Give us
the
a little
travel schedule, yeah.
It's going to be a little
nice. We haven't been dark in weeks, months.
I know. We've done like 10 weeks in a row here. Just been crazy.
HBO's off for like 2 months.
Really?
Yeah, man. These guys go off. They're off the air. They don't come back till the middle of January.
Oh, heck. What was it? Mad Men was off for 2 years.
Yeah.
When's it going to end?
Maybe we should do that. Just kidding.
No.
This is too fun.
Okay. Thanks to our donors of the week, Eric Aragone, of course. Mm-hmm. Any other fresh donations?
Well, there's a whole bunch of them. I just didn't get a chance to put them in the show notes.
Oh, okay. Who do we have?
We got a whole slew of them, as usual. We've got David Smith. Thank you, David. Man, he's been a regular.
Yep. Paul Stefano.
We've got a sustaining donation from Cam Cornelius.
Thanks, Cam.
Howard Ellison. Wow, thank you, Howard.
All the way from Great Britain.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. Amy Sorensi is a regular. She's a subscriber. Advanced Productions and Entertainment is a subscriber. Thank you. And Donal De Barra from Dublin, Ireland.
Dublin. He's from...
Wow. Cool, man. Camish voice. Echoes. Yeah. I mean, geez, I hope I'm getting them all. There's so many of them. Maria Macus. And yeah, I think we got them
outstanding.
All. Thank you.
If you want to donate to the show, I mean... We've been able to make incredible improvements in this show, mostly because of the help of folks like you. There's a donate button right above George's head. It's right up there.
Actually, I think I moved it down below
my feet.
You moved
it down below your feet?
It's down
here.
So
it's down there now. Okay. Yeah. You can donate to the show any amount, and that's fine, and that helps defray our production costs. This show's not free. It's not easy to produce this. And
we're going to be installing the sentry guns to knock the aircraft out of the sky in a five-mile radius around the building. Don't. If you donate tonight.
Yes. All righty. What else we got going on? Oh, let's see. Podcast. We find that a lot of people listen to the podcast. Probably more people than actually watch the show.
It's
live.
True. We've figured out that about over 50, there's like almost a double the number of people listening than there are watching.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're going to be delighted by what Fred had to say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you don't have to look at me.
Bonus.
Yeah. All right. Your career's looking up. All right. But you can, the podcast is available, of course, on our website, but also any other places.
Stitcher Radio, iTunes, anywhere your podcasts are subscribed to whatever device.
Right.
It's all there.
All righty.
VOBS.
Yes. And we also wanted to mention that VoiceOver Body Shop airtime is now 2 a.m. Greenwich time.
Greenwich?
Meantime.
And UTC.
In the meantime, in Greenwich, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
All righty. Opening VoiceOver reads. Send them in.
We got a batch of them.
We have three more,
and I promise to get them into the circulation.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, guys.
I need to thank our sponsors, of course, Harlan Hogan of VoiceOver Essentials, VoiceOver Extra, Edge Studios, your employers, Source Elements, and Rehearsal App.
VO2GoGo now.
That's right. That's VO2GoGo.com.
Right.
And for providing the uninterrupted live stream of this amazing show that is going into its fifth year this spring. If you can possibly believe that. Thank our wives. Of course, Marcy for being the wonderful host that she is. It was her birthday this weekend, and we got to go to the symphony, and we had a great time.
Very nice.
Learning the cultural life here in Southern California.
Yeah.
And, of course, Anthony Getting for the chat room. Mm-hmm. And Jack DeGolia, who continues to sit out there in the desert and write every little word we do.
And Catherine Curran, our producer for
I was getting to her.
Fred.
Yes,
best for the last.
Booking us, great people like Fred Melamed into our show. Yeah. That's going to do it for us tonight. Oh, also Lee Pinney for being Lee Pinney. And that's going to do it for us tonight. We'll see you next Monday night with our VoiceOver Masters Roundtable, VoiceOver Audio Masters Roundtable.
That's right.
And I'm Dan Leonard.
Happy Hanukkah as well.
Thank you very much.
Collective.
Yes.
Jay Preston was in the audience tonight, so he left that for us.
Excellent. All right. And can we run the thing for Exceptional Minds again after the show?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave that at the end.
Excellent. All righty. Well, I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next Monday night.
Happy Hanukkah.
Nobody ever asks a kid with autism, what is it you'd really like to do? At this school, we ask the kids, what is your goal? What is your dream? Exceptional Minds is a vocational training program for young adults on the autism spectrum who want to have careers in computer animation and visual effects. I think young people with autism are totally underestimated.
When you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. They all have different talents, different skills, and what surprised me is that there really are no limits. That if these guys believe that they can do something, they really can.
It's estimated that 90 to 95% of young adults with autism are unemployed or underemployed.
A lot of young adults still live at home. A lot of them suffer from depression and are very isolated from the rest of the world, and the opportunities for them are very limited.
We want to develop careers for our young adults. Our full-time program runs 3 years, at the end of which we have job placement and job coaching. We have a work readiness program. We also have our own in-house studio so that when our students graduate, they can do on-the-job training and work on real projects.
We outsourced about 30, 40 shots to the team here. They did fantastic work that we can put into a movie and be proud of it. It's great. I mean, we want to do it again.
The studio is their first step into the professional world, the first step in their new careers as digital artists.
The whole purpose is to get the students out into the real world.
We all have the same dreams. We want significance, dignity, and purpose with our lives. We have an opportunity to give those three words to every single student at this school who will actually be able to go out and participate in the dream.
This is my first full-time, full-paying job. I primarily work in After Effects. I learned After Effects at Exceptional Minds. It seemed like a good place for me to fit in because I was interested in animation.
Right from the first day that Nicky set foot in our company, he was producing work for us. We saw what level of professionalism is being instilled in them from the very beginning.
This was the first opportunity where Nicky could combine something he loved to do with something he was really, really good at that could eventually lead to employment.
When we first met Kevin, he was working at a supermarket bagging groceries, and they said he would never amount to anything else.
I work at Stargate Studios, and I'm a junior compositor. I mainly do like rotoscoping right now, and I'm still learning.
I think that you find great talent in the most amazing places. The students at Exceptional Minds have had a fair amount of training to get them ready for the visual effects environment.
If it wasn't for Exceptional Minds, I might still be at the supermarket, and I might be living at my parents' house.
Everything's changed. Nicky has purpose.
It feels like I'm a member of society now.
He's capable of making it on his own.
Once you get inside and you see what's really happening there, you immediately want to be a part of it.
It's the dream factory, you know, the movie business. And if you can connect people with their dreams, then the magic happens.
At Exceptional Minds, we like to say that we are changing lives one frame at a time.